Coming up, return to Bowden Fugu in far west Cornwall.
A Bronze Age royal hall in Germany.
And Roman river rituals. Welcome to Time Team News, a collection of archaeological stories from Britain and around the world.
But more than that, it's about sharing what the team gets up to in between the main Time Team digs. Derek, how have you been? We've got a special opportunity to take over Time Team News this month. It's absolute pleasure. We've got big shoes to fill for Danny. How you been?
I mean, don't worry. Danny will be back soon.
She will be back.
But I've been great. It's so nice to be doing Time Team News. And I've had a fantastic few months. And Time Team have sent me down to one of the most incredible sites in Hastings. And I can't say too much because we will reveal more in the near future. But I got to do some XRF analysis on some really interesting bits of Bronze Age pot and got to see an incredible Bronze Age site.
Oh, that sounds exciting. XRF, so that's the X-ray fluorescence? It looks a bit like the sort of ray gun from Star Trek.
That's right. It's the thing I use to analyse the Wynfarthing pendant to have a look at the chemical composition.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been looking at some interesting residues on some ceramic that maybe shouldn't be there.
Ooh, I look forward to hearing more about that.
It's been very interesting. But what have you been up to?
I've been really well. I've recently got back from a project in the South Pacific where we've been looking at mapping endangered cultural heritage, archaeological sites out there. It was incredible, but a bit more on that later, I think.
Fantastic. Now, one of the things we often see in comments is what happens to sites when Time Team leaves? And today you're in for a treat because we've got two examples of what goes on when Time Team moves on from a site.
That's right. And those of you that are looking out for Danny, she is coming up and she's going to be catching up with Dr. Philippa Walton, who's going to be talking through a classic Time Team episode at Pissbridge.
But before that, a site that is genuinely close to our hearts because it's Time Team's first site since the Patreon-backed revival and our first experience of a Time Team excavation.
It was special.
Welcome back to Cornwall, a return to the Bowden Iron Age Fugu on the Lizard Peninsula. Orientating a maze of country lanes is Time Team's Matt Bear Clark, 3D finds and historical reconstruction artist.
Hello from the new excavation here in Bowden.
And hello,
hello
from me.
Hello.
So I expect you want to know what's happened since we were last here.
You've got a bigger hole.
Well, you've got a much bigger hole. You can probably see that we've excavated this really nice section through the ditch. It's incredibly sharply angled, and it results in what we might term as a bit of an ankle breaker. You see this channel along the bottom. You really wouldn't want to rush along there because you're going to end up breaking your legs. It's more the kind of thing you might see in a Roman fort. It's not a Roman fort because we know that it's dated to around about 400 BC, so that's firmly in the Iron Age. But what we have exposed, if you remember back when John Gator did that little bit of geophys to see whether we could connect ditch to the exposed void, as we were calling it, the hole.
So the hole was here.
The hole was there, but it didn't take us long to start exposing the sides of a cut leading away from the ditch, this enclosure ditch. It just extends that far. There's a great big capstone there. There's a nice lintel there, and it's got stone sides to it, so it's stone walled. But what we've got here, we can imagine, must be part of the intact Fugu from 400 BC.
It's a very tight entrance.
If you were to run out of there in a hurry,
you're not going,
and you wouldn't know which way to go, you're not going to get up there, and you're unlikely to get up there because there'll be a big rampart in your way. So if you were invading, and this was blocked off in some way, there's no way you'd get out of this ditch.
The new discoveries at Bowden could not have been made if not for the tireless efforts for James and the volunteers of Meneag. Set up in 2008 by James, the group have continued investigating the mysterious Iron Age Fugu and adjoining Bronze Age settlement, with a few Roman discoveries along the way. Time for Bear to take a look inside a very windy finds tent.
We've got a spindle well here used to create thread, maybe wool. And that twisted thread can then be woven into cloth on a loom.
Other finds include this Treviska ware lug with twisted cord decoration. This whetstone was discovered within the fugu, and it still bears some of the iron residue from the knives sharpened on its smooth surface. A sherd of cooking pot. Lastly, a beautiful blue glass bead, likely from some exquisite Iron Age jewellery. Last on the agenda, bear scans for fugu with plans to update the digital historical reconstruction as seen in the main episode. This will include the newly discovered entry passageway and tunnel walls, bringing Time Team's understanding of the fugu bang up to date. As you know, we like to include ideas suggested by you, and this next site was put forward by Sigturn, so thank you for that. Excavations at Seddin in Brandenburg, northeast Germany, have revealed a humongous Bronze Age hall.
So Derek, how big are we talking?
It's 31 by 10 metres, which is ginormous. In fact, it's one of the largest discovered in the whole region. Arguably, it is the largest Nordic hall of its type.
Wow.
And its huge size indicates that it would have likely been a meeting place presided over by a regional chieftain or king, possibly a ruler known as King Hines around the 10th to 9th century BC. This possible royal connection is supported by its location right next to a tomb that's thought to belong to King Hines, dating to around 850 BC. The hall was constructed out of a timber frame with wattle and daub walls and likely a thatched roof. All organic materials, of course, that rot away. Now, anyone who's ever watched Time Team will know that finding wooden structures is incredibly difficult. Ultimately, you're looking for post holes in the ground. It's a case of joining the dots.
So hang on a minute. When we talk about the Bronze Age, we might traditionally think about small roundhouses, but not big halls.
That's right. In the British Bronze Age, it tends to be fairly small-scale ephemeral structures. You'd associate these kind of great halls more with the medieval period. There is one example, I think, from a site near London, of a Neolithic kind of large-scale house, but nothing quite like this one.
Amazing. So what can we learn from the excavations? What techniques might have been used?
It's a really interesting one. Whenever I see a site like this in the news, I think about Time Team and I think about what we would have done there. So I'm sure they did some geophysical survey and some mapping and looked at the landscape context. I like to imagine a German version of Stu bodging around the landscape, looking for lumps and bumps, seeing what he can see, but also thinking through the excavation itself. Because these structures are so ephemeral, they would have had to find most of the features, I suspect, by direct excavation.
Mm-hmm. I bet the environmental analysis, the sort of work Naomi does as well, would have been fascinating.
Massively. Every little bit of evidence on this site would have been absolutely key to understanding the bigger picture and to link it to that all-important King Hines.
It's funny, actually. I was just thinking back to the first Time Team news and when Danny showcased that incredible Bronze Age sword. And that was from Germany, right?
Yeah, well, that was from a completely different site in Nordlingen, much further south. Although the two stories aren't directly connected, they do stem from broadly the same era around 3,000 years ago. Put together, they help shed light on a really colourful period in the Nordic Bronze Age.
One of the things we often get asked about on Time Team is what happened next, what happened after Time Team had filmed an episode. And I'm very lucky here to be joined by Philippa Walton, who was one of the leads at Piercebridge, an excavation that Time Team did back in 2010. Philippa, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, back in 2010, I invited Time Team to come along to a site I've been working on with two divers. So on the River Tees at Piercebridge, these two divers, Bob and Rolf, had been looking in the river for bits of a Roman bridge. And while they were diving, they started finding hundreds of Roman artifacts. They just kept pulling out finger rings, brooches, military equipment, horse harness, knives, just you think of any Roman object type, and they were finding it. And I really wanted to contextualise what was happening in the river. So I asked Time Team to come along, do some geophysics, do a little bit of diving and snorkeling, and they kindly obliged, came along and helped me out, trying to get an idea of why those objects were on the riverbed.
Fantastic. So isn't this the one where all that thousands of pounds worth of geophysics equipment was being floated?
Yeah, in a dinghy, yes. It floated along the river nice and calmly on a dinghy for 2 days. And then we woke up on day three and the very, very shallow River Tees had turned into this raging torrent.
So why are we getting all these objects in the riverbed? Obviously, you're saying, you know, there's a lot of occupation and there's a main Roman road going through. But is there any other reason? Are people just dropping stuff as they're going across the river?
So that's the one question I really wanted to answer. So I applied for a major research grant from the Leverhulme with Hella Eckhart at the University of Reading. And we worked on that for a whole 2 years. Wow. So we're thinking, why are these objects there on the riverbed? And what can we tell about the sorts of people who use those objects? You know, people just dropping stuff as they're crossing the river, like disposing of their rubbish? Or is this something a little bit more religious in nature? So a ritual element. So you cross a bridge, and when you cross a bridge, you make an offering to the god to make sure you're on your travels, that you're successful and that you come back alive. That's probably particularly important for people going up from York to the military frontier. Most of them are going to be soldiers. You've got thousands of Roman coins, so silver denarii and a full range of bronze coins, right through from the Iron Age all the way through to the 5th century. There are hundreds of brooches. There's even a finger ring which is engraved with the inscription which says, to the god Mars. So we're starting to think that maybe some of these objects were being offered to particular gods, and Mars is the god of war, so it's that the association with the Roman army. There was huge numbers of military belt fittings of particular types, and they're of types that were used by soldiers who came from the Danubian areas of the empire, so you could start to see where these people were coming from.
What do you have any favourite find from there?
Oh, that's a really difficult one.
Oh, sorry.
So there's a beautiful little figurine of a ram. But the person, it's made out of bronze, and it's about that big. And the person who made the figurine, they must have seen a ram at some point in their life, but it just looks a bit cartoony, and he's got a very cute little face. So I quite like him. And also the ram is the symbol of the god Mercury. So again, it has that ritual religious association. And I was always really keen. I know archaeologists, if they don't understand anything, are always keen on saying it's ritual. But I always thought from the very moment I saw this material from Piercebridge that it was ritual, religiously motivated. It wasn't just rubbish. And that little figurine clearly points to that ritual element.
Wow. And so where are all these finds now?
So they were acquired under the Treasure Act, and the Museum of Archaeology at the University of Durham acquired the whole assemblage.
Wow.
And they've put on lots of exhibitions with their students at Durham University, which make use of the collections. So it's continuing to have impact. It's not just sitting in a museum store. People are working with it, reinterpreting the objects and putting on them on display for new audiences all the time.
That's fantastic. Congratulations, because that sounds like such a fabulous site to have been involved in.
Yeah, it's taken up nearly half of my career. I've spent more than 20 years of my life working on it. And now it's come to an end. I feel a little bit bereft, but I'm going to still keep doing little bits of research on it, I think, until I retire.
Thanks, Philippa. Thanks very much.
No problem at all.
Wow. Well, the Piercebridge episode is available to watch right now on the Time Team Classics YouTube channel. And if you'd like to discover more about the fascinating project, Philippa has co-authored a book, Bridge Over Troubled Water, along with Hella Eckhart, which you can access online for free. We've put the links for both in the description box below. So, you mentioned the Pacific. We have to come back to it. Tell me about this holiday you had.
Holiday, how dare you? So, it was a genuine piece of research. We were very fortunate. It's a collaborative project between the University of Highlands and Islands, Bournemouth University, archaeologists in Auckland and heritage specialists on the islands themselves in the South Pacific. And what we were doing, we were working through funding from the Arcadia Foundation, and we were looking to map and record endangered cultural heritage, archaeological sites that perhaps are under threat from climate change specifically. So increased storiness, rising sea levels, things like that.
That sounds really interesting, but also a truly international team.
Yeah, and it's really important with these sorts of projects to make sure that we're working with the islanders themselves. It's not about a case of a bunch of Europeans turning up and telling them how to look after their archaeology, but actually they know what their heritage is, they know what's important to them, and we needed them to talk us through what's going on and what we needed to record. So we visited two countries. We worked in Niue, and we also worked in the Cook Islands. We visited two islands in the Cook Islands. We were in Rarotonga and in Aachu, and we just saw the most fantastic array of archaeological sites, from early Maori settlers, burial caves, these sort of stone structures known as marae, which are the meeting points where they sort of tribal leaders would undertake ceremonies, but also more modern history, things that were really pertinent to them. So some of the oldest sort of Christian churches that were found on the island and that had been damaged by quite severe cyclones over time. So we were able to do 3D recording, mapping and things like that with the archaeology.
Now, one of the pictures you sent me was you hacking at bushes with a machete. Can you tell me, what were you looking for, and what did you find?
Well, I mean, it's not like forestry in the UK, I'll tell you that, Derek. It's the rate of growth and the density of vegetation on these tropical islands, these subtropical islands, is just incredible. It's warm, it's wet, it's perfect for growth. And as a result, a lot of the archaeology, and a lot of it, I mean, most of it we're looking in the last 1,000 years or so, is no longer where habitation is taking place. So it's deep in the forest, and it's been grown up. It's grown up over a lot of time. So to get to a lot of it, which probably hasn't been looked at since the 1980s in the most recent times, is actually you've got to get a machete and you've got to get out and you've got to go looking for it. You've got to reveal it and watch out for spiders and crabs and sea snakes in some instances. But it was an absolute pleasure. It's the sort of thing you dream of doing as an undergraduate, but also to be welcomed and supported and embraced by local communities and to learn so much from them about their cultural heritage. It was an absolute privilege and honour to be able to be there.
And that's it from this month, and in fact from this year. And what an incredible year it's been. Time Team are up to 200,000 subscribers, so thank you all for tuning in.
But we will be returning in 2024 along with Danny for more Time Team news. So keep your eyes peeled for some compilations with some of the best stories, best news and discoveries that came from 2023, coming out very, very soon.
As always, keep us posted with the stories and news you would like us to cover down in the comments below.
3D models from this month's episode are available on Patreon, along with classic Time Team specials, Dig Watch coverage, and extended interviews.
We're edging closer to our goal of 10,000 paid Patreon members, helping us do more and more Time Team digs.
So thank you again for watching. You know the drill. Make sure you subscribe below, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Join Time Team on Patreon to access exclusive 3D models, masterclasses, and behind-the-scenes insights.